y'all tuned into the greatest.
This is Sales Ops Demystified.
Ask about me.
You have to be closing all the time. Always be closing.
I love what I do. When you love what you do, you want to be the best at it.
The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Learn from thought leaders in sales operations. Actionable strategies from Sales Ops Ninjas. And now, your hosts, Tom Hunt and Henry Peacock. Sales Ops Demystified.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Sales Operations Demystified. And we're joined by Johnny Day of CrowdCube.
Hello.
Head of Sales Operations?
Yes.
This is fantastic. And also an EFSA customer.
Yes.
We've had indeed. I think it's one other EFSA customer on the show. So it's going to be super interesting. And we haven't actually had an in-person. The last five have been remote. So this is great to have you back, have someone back in the room.
Yeah.
So we're going to go through the normal nine questions. If you have any questions, if you're watching live, feel free to ping them in the chat and we will answer them as well as we can. So, Johnny, how did you get into sales operations?
So it's been a bit of a strange one for me. So I actually am from a digital marketing background.
Awesome.
So I spent the best part of sort of 8 to 10 years working in digital marketing. And basically, there was a requirement in the business to move into sales operations.
So were you doing digital marketing at CrowdCube?
I was doing digital marketing at CrowdCube. And basically, we decided to rein back our digital marketing activity because we wanted to focus more on B2B. And then there was a requirement specifically to focus on supporting the sales team, sales enablement, CRM. And there just wasn't anybody in that role. And weirdly, we've just literally today put a new job role up
for
someone to come and work alongside me at CrowdCube because
in sales operations
because we've seen the value that it can generate. And interestingly, when I started doing this probably about 18 months ago, there wasn't any jobs out for sales operations. Whereas now, if you go on LinkedIn, there's loads. So there's definitely a requirement and a recognition of the value of data in sales operations and the importance that, you know, you need your sales guys out and about. They need to do admin, but they also need people supporting them on the on the sales enablement side of things. So,
and that's in the last 18 months, you've seen more demand for the role.
Definitely.
I see. This makes sense because there's so much more of a buzz around the topic, but I'm struggling to understand why.
I think because there's always the challenge between sales and marketing.
Yeah.
So originally when I moved into the sales team, I was still actually reporting into the CMO. And I'm from a world where back in the day I was having to manipulate and manage Google feeds and that wasn't all automated. So I'm quite kind of data savvy. And basically you're in a situation now where you've got to keep your data really solid and robust for the sales guys so that you can monitor the pipeline. You then need to keep the data really robust so that when you get to year end, you can do your connection between pipeline and revenue. And then you also need to keep it really tight for relationships with third parties and partners. And then you also need to keep it great for the marketing guys because a huge amount of retention is driven off the data. And so you end up in a situation where if you don't have great data from the sales guys, then everything slowly starts to creak and fall over. So that's the requirement, is sort of forcing and training and educating.
And so do you think then that the reason it's much bigger now than it was, say, 2 years or 3 years ago is because there's more data?
Yes.
That's why?
Yes, definitely.
Cool. Okay, that makes sense to me. And that's probably only going to become more of a requirement in the coming years, right, as we get more data.
Yes, I think so.
Okay,
cool. Yeah, and I think, you know, more and more of the big platforms, I mean, you know, if you're a Salesforce user or a HubSpot user, they've got incredible, you know, GUIs on top of the platform. So you don't have to be a data guru in the same way as if you're using DB Visualizer or something like that, where you're getting into the SQL and down in the detail. So there are those benefits, but there's also that connection between sort of analytics and data analytics, web analytics, Google Analytics, and then sales analytics. And the requirement is pushing more towards
sales. So no plans to move back into marketing anytime soon?
Not at the moment.
But maybe. Okay, fantastic. Let's move on to question number two. What do you think makes an awesome sales ops person?
It's a good question. So I think you have to be, you obviously have to be passionate in order to be good at anything. You have to have that kind of that mastery of 10,000 hours, right? And I don't think I'm there yet, but.
How many hours do you think you have?
Getting close. Maybe halfway there, I'd say.
Yeah. In sales operations.
In sales operations specifically. So for me, I mean, the way I tackled it originally, because I moved from marketing into a B2B role.
Yeah.
And then B2B kind of means CRM management, which is a huge part of sales operations. But for me, where the connection really came was using third-party data.
Interesting.
And so there's a huge amount of value and there's a huge amount of businesses that provide data. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But the way that you use and execute that data then obviously enables your sales team to grow. Because what they're all really crying out for is sort of that inside sales piece, which is how do I make sure my sales guy who spent years and years training on delivering conversion through signing terms, shaking hands, closing deals, he wants more time sat in a room in our business with entrepreneurs and less time having to do, manipulating data, filtering inbound, managing lists. He wants someone to do that for him so that
he can just
crack on. So we're using a lot of third party data to drive growth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with technology, we've got a fantastic data partner that we work with down in Exeter called Big, and they help us to make that data smarter. So that might be using dates to filter when we might contact people, drive automations.
Nice.
We then are starting to use sort of machine learning using attributes and leading indicators of who to contact when and why. So there's loads of possibilities. So I think that kind of makes, well, for me, I think is really important from a sales operations person. I also think it's just a requirement now to be, for want of a better word, you need to be very commercially minded because, you know, I mean, I work in a startup and we are striving to get to profitability. And so everything we've done this year in terms of our sales model directly links back to revenue. So we sat down for three weeks in January and just said, right, this is how much money we made last year. And then we reverse engineered everything up from the revenue.
Yeah.
And so being able to go into that detail is really important. And then for me, it's the age old thing of cross collaboration, right? Working with, product managers, like we've got a Salesforce admin. So I work very closely with her, working with product so that they know what you might need from an engineering requirement, working with our legal teams, finance, or everyone wants help, guidance and support. And so the more that you can help and guide them, the more that you kind of move towards that ultimate sort of model, which is customers in the middle and everyone's providing support and you're helping enable them, optimizing, improving them to do that.
Nice. just to jump back to the data piece, so I understand like the business need for you guys. Crowdcube raises funds for startups or small businesses from the crowd. So you have this massive list of investors and then you want to try and get the best small businesses or startups to lift. Yes. And then you guys could take a cut from both sides
yes.
Cool. So you essentially want, you're like data players to understand all of the good small businesses and startups in the, just the UK?
We've got an operation in Spain and we do raise finance for businesses in Europe, but obviously there's some regulatory issues. Broadly speaking, the UK market is still massive.
So you essentially need to get a picture of all the good businesses that may want to raise finance, and then you want to choose the one for your salespeople to go and speak with, right? And so that's your job, is like making the salespeople more effective to go and find the good ones.
Yes.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. Got it. And I mean, the way I always come back to it is that concept of everyone likes to think that their brain is better than the machine, but actually, if you teach the machine, in this instance, it's actually just to do with repetition and building and building and building, so that a salesperson comes in every day and the work's there in front of him in his CRM. Great. It's Monday. I know on Monday I've got 3 meetings. I've got 2 hours where I can set aside some time to do some admin. And then the rest of the time I'm doing this, this, and this because my diary is populated. Yeah, yeah. and like, you start at ground zero, and then you just keep working forward in that way.
Don't make them think. They come in and they just have to, like, they have to become the machine, right? Where they're just doing what they're told by the computer.
You're there to optimize your sales team, which if some people might think is making them look good, then so be it.
Yeah. What, how many people in the sales team at the moment?
So we have two or three people in our partnerships team. We have two or three people in our inbound team.
Yeah.
And they kind of sit very closely with our partnerships function. Mm-hmm. And then we've got five or six guys in our outbound team.
Cool. And there's you and soon to be. So we can actually plug the job role. Have you filled the job role yet?
Yeah, it's literally.
Oh, you have filled it.
Well, no, I haven't filled it. I only went out this afternoon.
So let's plug it.
Yeah.
How can people find the job role?
If you just go to crowdcube.com and search for careers, it's on the careers page.
Nice. So if you want to work with Johnny at Crowdcube in sales operations, go to their site, go to the career section and check out the job description. Anyway, cool. Moving on. Do you think sales experience is a necessity to be effective at sales operations?
Fundamentally, no. I don't believe it is. I think to have a empathetic understanding of what salespeople's skills are and aren't is obviously valuable. But I don't believe that you need to have done sales to be good at sales operations, specifically because, like I say, I think a lot of it is to do with being logical, ordered, structured, comfortable with process, having the ability to say no, prioritization, all the things that in a way a sort of a good product manager does. That, you know, they're able to say, look, we can build technically anything, or engineers say it's always, we can always build what you're asking. It's just a case of time, money, where does it sit in the roadmap? What's the prioritization? So I don't believe that you have to be a salesperson. Yeah.
But you essentially were in sales before, right?
Yes.
Not like in your digital marketing role, like your goal is, when you're marketing, is to sell something.
Yes.
But I guess you're just not doing it in person. It's one-to-many as opposed to one-to-one.
Yes. In some, yeah.
So you are like, well, as you actually said before, you are quite commercially minded, or you must be, because you went through that marketing. So you understand like the process of buying.
Yes.
But you just, like, well, do you have sales experience?
Yeah, I have worked in sales before.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
I think everyone has, you know, if you've ever worked in a shop or, you know,
you're inside.
In some, you know, or even if just working in a restaurant and someone says, you know, what's the specials in, or, you know, what's the recommendation? There's an element of selling in there. So.
There is a really good book I read called To Sell as Human, I think by Dan Pink. And that was his point. Like, literally, if you're like going home to your spouse and you want them to cook dinner, you like go in and you're really, really happy. And then you like give them a present and then you want to ask them to cook dinner. That's selling, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but not necessary for sales operations.
No, I mean the way I sort of think of it or believe that I see it is a good sales ops person understands what did I say? So they understand the sort of the heartbeat and the rhythm of the company, which is sort of a third of what you need to be good at. Because everybody, if you buy into what the company's trying to achieve, then you kind of buy into the scenario that your CEO has put forward and the ideas and the future and the goals of the business. Mm-hmm. So that's a third of what you need. The next third is your ability to understand the sales guys and what they're trying to achieve and their commercial goals and, you know, understanding people's motivations. Because a lot of what salespeople do is read the room, right? Is this guy going to be a hard ass? Is he going to be a bit more relaxed? Does he want to know the detail? Does he already know what's going on and he wants to negotiate straight away? It's just understanding that. And then the last bit is understanding the tech stack and what's the actual, you know, no engineering project is ever perfect and no marketing stack is perfect, no sales stack is perfect, but what's your future vision for what you want your sales environment to look like and what do you think perfect might look like, and then you can strive to get towards it.
Which is a great link to the next question. What is your current sales ops tech stack?
So I would describe it as a bit of a hybrid between sales and marketing, actually. Mm. So we have we're a Salesforce customer.
Yep.
And we have been for about 4 years.
To quickly jump in here. Do you Salesforce for the entrepreneur side and for the investor side?
No.
You know, just for the entrepreneur side.
At the moment, just on the entrepreneur side.
And so where does your investor, I don't know if you can say this, but what tool do you use to like manage your investor data?
So our investor data historically has lived in our own admin system, okay, cool. Yeah. Which isn't a CRM. It's kind just of, it was an originally purpose-built tool.
Yeah.
And they've lived in there. And then we've got a different marketing platform that runs that.
Yeah, sure.
Salesforce customer. We're an Ebster customer, of course. So that's in the stack there. We use tools like CreditSafe to just ensure that we're working with a UK, more often than not, UK limited company.
Yeah.
And we can, you know, from a compliance perspective, check their credit score. We're a DocuSign user because we send out agreements and terms and measure engagement with entrepreneurs. We use HubSpot on the B2B side of things, which is an interesting one because actually HubSpot used to be a B2B marketing platform. And as it's built and grown, it's very much moved into the same realms as being a CRM platform.
Yeah.
With a AppExchange in the same way as Salesforce. So you end up with a slightly confusing data structure.
I don't understand what you're using. Because I thought Salesforce was being used for the entrepreneurs and HubSpot was, and I think HubSpot is the B2B side.
Yeah, so we used originally Salesforce was put in our Exeter team and our sales team in London.
Yeah.
And it was being used as a CRM. And that was before we actually really considered having a CRM in the business on the investor side. So it was originally put in to help the journey because CrowdCube has a sort of relatively distributed office structure in that we've got a sales partnerships team up in London because a huge number of the entrepreneurs that we work with are here. We then have our sort of onboarding campaign success launch team down in Exeter, and they're supported by legal compliance completions. And then we've got an engineering team in Cardiff.
Oh, cool.
So in order to offer entrepreneur delight from very high touch, you know, one-to-one trust building up in London, we have to make sure that the information is clear and concise so that when they get passed to somebody that they might only speak to over the phone or Hangouts or online, there's a clear transition between the two. And so that's why Salesforce was originally put in. And basically in time, we've sort of seen the value of building that architecture stack around the entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And I actually consider ourselves as a three-sided marketplace because we have investors, we have entrepreneurs, and we also have our partners.
And what do they do?
So our partners have fallen into then two buckets. We have campaign support partners who help get companies marketing ready. They might help with brand development.
Yeah.
They might help connect them with lead investors. And then we also have affiliates, basically.
So we provide you entrepreneurs.
That send us deal flow.
Yeah. Cool.
And introduces. And that might be corporate advisors. We've got a very strong relationship with Grant Thornton. We're in the process of just signing some terms with a very large UK bank. So we have a requirement to fulfill their needs internally for internal users and also externally for customers in the company.
Do we get all the tech, all the tools?
I think so. Oh, the other one that we use, which is super, super smart, which I'm actually really enjoying, is we also use, like I said, third-party data providers. And so what we're actually doing is taking third-party data, we're then placing it into Salesforce, and that essentially puts it in our CRM. We then connect our CRM to LinkedIn Sales Navigator, and there is now the functionality within LinkedIn Sales Navigator to create advanced searches that uses the data from your CRM.
Yeah.
So we're basically leveraging third-party data to say, this is the data we already know about, and this is the data we don't know about, which then means that we don't, as a sales team, spend time all looking in the same place.
So you're saying that when a salesperson is searching LinkedIn Sales Navigator, they can see that data from the CRM from the third-party provider?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Similar to something that Ebster does as well.
Yeah. You mentioned a tool like that you were using that was cool. Is there something doing that for you, or is that just the integration?
That's just the integration. And then basically we use our third-party data agency who takes things like web data and our CRM data. And then we're basically building machine learning models in a data warehouse externally, and then using things like Tableau to visualize some of that and building trends and pulling data together, which we can then put back into things like Salesforce or HubSpot to then execute.
So what's like a core insight that you could, or advantage that you could prove or use from machine learning on that data? Like an, like a thing that someone like me would understand.
So for example, the most important thing for most people when buying something is relevancy, timing, and context. So we're trying to use data to make sure we speak to the right person at the right time, and that we use some structure either from the data we've got or as part of the research function of a outbound team member to connect those pieces together. And that then means, if someone's interested in raising finance, there's no point me ringing you up the day after you've just completed your first VC round, because you'll probably say to me, oh, I've had the most stressful 6 weeks of my life. I've just got the line, you know, the signature on the dotted line. I'm still recovering from the champagne that we popped last night. I'm not interested in raising finance right now. So for us, it's about connecting with those people at the right time.
And making your salespeople more productive in the process, right?
Absolutely.
Cool. We have a question, or maybe multiple. Jack, how do you deal with the implementation of sales methodologies? I'm not 100% sure what Jack means by that. Did that make sense to you, Johnny?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And actually, one of the reasons for hiring this new person is actually because we need to do a better job of documenting sales methodologies. For that very reason, it's quite easy for me to come up with lots of concepts and ideas, but we almost always need someone who can then turn some of these ideas into reality, document them. And then the most important thing, really, I think, is about making sure that people sit down in a room and then you train them and educate them and bring them on that journey with you, so that each day they feel like they're upskilling and training and learning and developing. And actually, interestingly, when I started this role, we were paying for Ebster, and some of the team were using it, some of them weren't. Some people did understand what it did, some people didn't. And actually, Wayne came in. I said to Wayne, look, I've told everyone how great it is, but I'm going to organize a session. Can you just come in and walk people through the product? And then the penny drops because somebody else is saying it. So that, I think, is a real advantage in terms of implementing our sales methodology. But I would also say we're actually in the process of engaging with a third party to try and develop more of the coaching side of the sales skills. So me and my head of sales, we often see it as like a good salesperson needs to be able to do 50% operational, keeping systems updated, and then 50% of their job is learning how to become a master of selling. And it's a constant balance, because I'm saying it's not in Salesforce, it's not happening, and he's saying, but I need to sit down with them and train them on, you know, how to close a deal and negotiate and, you know, all those sorts of things. So I hope that kind of answers the question on
hopefully methodologies. Jack, we've got a follow up. Go on, Jack. Do you use a specific platform for the onboarding of reps?
No, not at the moment. I know there's obviously some pretty cool ones. In fact, one of our old Crowdcube employees actually went off and set up an onboarding platform
For salespeople.
For anybody, called Personably. But we're actually in the process, like I say, of trying to pull this documentation together. So for a long time, we were using like a Google site, and just trying to populate information that was sort of getting lost in emails and just trying to bring it into some semblance, so that if you were a new sales guy, instead of it being, hey, here's your laptop, it's a big city out there, off you go. So we're trying to make sure that we've got an onboarding process, which is session on Salesforce, session on LinkedIn, session on HubSpot, session on how that merges with Ebster, session on data analytics, session on reporting, all that sort of stuff. So we do try and do that, but it could be better.
And this person is going to be helping you with that.
Yeah, I think so. And also, interestingly, our Salesforce admin. So our old Salesforce admin was more interested in moving into a sort of developer role because she was more that way inclined. Whereas our new Salesforce admin is very focused on wanting to help train and support and upskill the sales guys, which is just perfect, because then you've got that other voice helping to support your iteration of what you're thinking.
And in a quick break from our regular programming, I'd just like to tell you a little bit more about what EBSTA actually does. We've had a lot of people saying, well, EBSTA's running this podcast, but we don't actually know what EBSTA do. Like, what do you guys do? And so the best way I like to describe what EBSTA does is to say that EBSTA will connect to every inbox from every employee that your business has ever had, and will then map and score all of the relationships that your business has ever had. So if you had a salesperson that 3 years ago had a relationship with someone, they didn't close that account, so they didn't update or they didn't create that account or add that record in Salesforce, that salesperson leaves the business, you lose that relationship. The business loses that relationship. But if you had EBSTA running, you would be able to surface all that information. You'd be able to see an engagement score with that person in Salesforce. So a new salesperson, let's say starting tomorrow, could then pick up that relationship and then could start engaging and potentially close that deal. So if that sounds interesting to you, that's just one of the things that EBSTA's team product does. So you can go to www.ebsta.com/SOD. That's www.ebsta.com/SOD, and jump on a quick demo with one of our team.
What is your favorite tech tool?
I can't use EBSTA, can I?
No, you can't.
I mean, it sounds silly, but not to be sort of brainwashed by the cult that everyone knows is our friends at Salesforce, but we are, they've got some pretty interesting technology that we just weren't using and actually were paying for.
For example?
So, we were finding that we were building technology with a dev agency, and it turns out that for our partners, for example, we can spin up a whole partner community, and we can really put ourselves in the middle of that partner community. Yeah. So, and part of the benefit of that is that we can then get partners to, through pooled logins, submit leads into the system. They can track leads. We can then, because we've got quite a long sales cycle, put how much money they're making into that system and feed that back into them. We can then also build products, because we can fire up a community. So our product team can say, right, fire me up a product community for your partners, fire me up a product community for entrepreneurs. And we can do that all within our existing stack.
Yeah.
And we just weren't using it, but we were paying for it. And so I think it's just about making sure you really understand all the things that you've got on offer. And we also didn't realize that we've had some challenges between in the speed of growing, as everyone does, a couple of our systems not working perfectly. We actually have resource that we've paid for with Salesforce that we've never utilized to build some integrations for us. So again, I think in terms of what's my favorite tool, well, I think it's going to be Salesforce. Because
there's so much stuff there.
There's so much stuff there that we just weren't using. And actually, if you push Salesforce, then you know the possibilities are pretty massive, actually. And I've got a friend of mine who works in sales ops over at a company called Alpha FX, and they've built some really cool stuff just with Salesforce as a stack. Yeah. So I think, whilst it is a bit of a cult, as we all know, and you get bought in, and you know, if you spend the time, the power of it can be pretty good for helping to scale, I think.
Nice. How do you deal with data quality? And as you mentioned, the CRM, Salesforce admin, how does your role like cross over with this person?
So we're in the position where we're currently using Classic, and we're obviously going to have to migrate over to Lightning, which is potentially a pretty large bit of work. So we're just trying to divvy that up between us. We also use a platform. We use two platforms, sorry. One of them is called Cloudingo, which is a Salesforce data sort of checking, manipulation and management tool. So again, there's quite a lot of technical config in there, but using something like Cloudingo.
I think so. We had Jay Carroya from Doctify. I don't know if you know him. I think that was the tool he was raving about.
Yes.
I think it's really good.
It's pretty powerful once you get it set up right, but it is complicated. Okay. And it's obviously easy to break things at
scale. Who is it you or the Salesforce admin who's responsible for
Ideally the Salesforce admin, but I suppose in my, as I'm growing, I'm busy learning. So for context, our Salesforce admin left. We then onboarded an agency to pass over to.
Yeah.
And then our new Salesforce admin has only just joined.
Okay.
And I was basically bridging the gap between that. And I suppose I was lucky enough that I'm not sort of too scared of breaking stuff. So I taught myself Salesforce administration in a very short period of time.
So you're a certified admin?
Not quite, but I'm studying at the moment so that I can A, understand what's possible, but also just so I can do the odd bit myself.
Yeah, nice.
The other tool that we're using, which is actually not really out yet, it's being released in July. And again, it's on the more of the marketing side, but it's a company called Distill.ai. Mm-hmm. And they, it's actually built by the team at Big, who we work with. Mm-hmm. And they basically enable us to enrich data and take data out and add value to it and then put it back in.
Okay.
And so they're the ones who are helping us to turn third-party data into enriched data, customer data platform designed for it's cool for marketers, but I mean, there's a bit of a blurring here between B2B and marketing and, you know, marketing sales and so on.
So will they take an email address and then give you the LinkedIn profile? Is this all you mean by data enriching?
It depends. Those sorts of things are possible, and we have done stuff like that. We've actually, I mean, without going off into a massive tangent, we actually built an entire engine to do finding companies.
Yeah, nice.
Which we, I actually named it. It was called Sahara, and the idea was there was millions of grains of sand, millions of companies, and the idea was that for crowdfunding, we found that there's a lot of companies which have a certain profile, certainly as they get a bit bigger, and it's about finding similar companies with a similar, because we're ultimately trying to find companies with web traffic, social following, you know, brand validation, position in their market fit, all those sorts of things. And so we basically built a sort of data whacking tool to try and do that. And so we can then run those things, enrich it with data that we want, first or third party data, and then try and inject it into Salesforce, and that can drive email, that can then drive list building and so on.
And so this new tool that's coming out is going to help you do that?
Yeah. So we've been working on integrating it into our Salesforce backend.
Yeah.
And we've also been using that tool to create our own scoring system using the EBS to score.
Let's talk more about that.
We can talk about more of that in a minute.
Biggest challenge. You've
got questions.
Oh, what? James, is there a way of improving recruiting and hiring practices, and how do you go about supporting the sales teams?
Which order you want to tackle those?
Is there a way of improving?
Is that in terms
for
of
reps? I think.
Oh right. I mean, in terms of our sales guys.
For reps.
We obviously try and do as much as we can in the interviews to try and screen, you know, we have two or three interviews with people.
Mm.
We go out for a few beers maybe with people to see what their soft skills are like, as well as their sort of interviews environment, hard and soft, because in our world, we can't speak to someone in the marketing department or someone in the finance department. We have to speak to CEOs because ultimately they're the ones who make the decision on finance. So we try and have a really clear understanding of soft and hard skills when it comes to hiring reps.
Mm-hmm.
We then do all of the sort of standard interview processes, but with the right interview structures, you can get from people their ability to sell back to you.
Sure.
So I think it's all about organization and planning, right? If you're busy, you run into an interview with not a lot of preparation, you've not really spent time on really understanding what you're trying to get out of the interview, what you're trying to get that individual to prove to you, then you really will go down the, do I like them? Yes, no, maybe. And then you'll sit on the fence or go one side or the other. So
preparation
is always going to be key. And you know, the best bit of advice I ever got was, if there's one thing that you want, is what do you want that person to prove to you? Because they've obviously proved something on the piece of paper that made you select them for a phone interview. And then once they've been through the phone interview, you've given them something that you've given them the time to meet them face to face. So what do you want them to prove to you? Mm. I think is super critical. And then, you know, there's 101 books about, you know, that Google have done tests on around, you know, removing subjectivity and, yeah, you know, all those sorts of things. And
then second question about how do you go about supporting your sales team?
So I think there's a couple of threads to that. So in one sense, it's supporting them in terms of listening what their challenges might be on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. And can we solve that with technology? Because in the same way as in the MarTech environment, there's pages and pages and everyone's seeing the big diagrams, yeah, of, you know, retention tools and mm-hmm. marketing tools and, you know, the perfect sales stack. That's kind of starting to happen in the sales environment. So understanding their challenges and seeing whether you can support it with tech is one thing. I think, you know, we've got a head of sales, so really listening to what he wants to spend less time on and where he wants to spend more time, and can I help him to do that? Can I optimize his ability to be out in meetings is critical for me. So whether that's sort of inside sales, list building, using technology to provide me with the answers to what he's looking for is really important. On the partnership side of things in our business, it's about making sure that, we've got the right technology in place to help them scale and grow, right? Because our business, you know, our board aren't necessarily bothered that we're losing money. They're interested in us growing. Mm-hmm. So my school of thought every day is, am I helping our sales team to grow? And am I helping them to generate more money? The closers are closing. And I suppose that kind of then ties into my last point, which is our inbound team. We've designed it in a way where we specifically want them to come in every day and think about, I'm going to be given deals and I'm going to work on them. Mm. Whereas the outbound guys need to go and find them through networking, through events, speaking on panels. So supporting them in that way is really important. And then I suppose the last piece is just them knowing that if they're running out the door and something's broken, I can fix it for them or try and help them to fix it. Is always good, right? Everyone likes to feel that they've got someone supporting them in their day-to-day job. It's, you know, builds a good culture.
What is your biggest challenge in the role and how do you overcome it?
Biggest challenge is, at the moment, time in the day. Mm. So quite a lot of what we want to achieve is quite technically advanced. And we've always been at the forefront of using big data, using automation. That age-old challenge of, you know, automation versus personalization. How do we triage the right business or the right person that's coming in to the right person in our sales team? So like I said to you, we need to speak to the CEOs. So using our own data to say, right, we've got an inbound from a company. Darren is absolutely stacked at the moment, but he's the best person to take on this company because he worked with these three companies last time. I think personality wise, he's going to build a strong relationship. Connecting the right people is really important, and triaging things in the right way is massively critical. And, you know, like I say, I think it's just hours in the day is the toughest one, and prioritizing like we have short-term goals like any business. Mm. So, you know, we've got sales targets to hit and we've got thresholds that we need to work towards. But you also have to be planning for the future. And quite often in a startup, you shoot for the short term and forget the long term. Mm. And then you either miss targets or you build a scenario where you can't scale because you haven't built the tech stack to enable you to scale. Mm. You know, you can't automate emails because you haven't tagged and categorized your data correctly. So you can't segment it quickly, which means you can't automate. And that for me is where sales operations is building its real bedrock in those teams. Is scaling is basically to do with getting more revenue in more quickly with the same resource, or a very small amount of extra resource. Mm. So that's where I see my challenge at the moment.
But I mean, you have the new person joining, right? So you're going to have double the time of the day.
Hope so.
Do you think, or do you have a single metric that you would use to judge all sales reps?
I mean, if I was being really critical, it's got to be revenue, right?
Mm.
Because you can, you know, there's a lot of data now in the world, and there's a lot of fuzzy metrics. So you can measure people on conversion, and they might be an amazing converter, but the revenue doesn't come out the bottom. Or they could be really busy, and they could be doing lots of calls and having lots of meetings, but the revenue doesn't spit out the bottom. And so I think it's got to connect to revenue. Mm-hmm. And if you understand your revenue, then you can work back. And if you can work backwards from revenue, then it means you can say to somebody, thank you, but you're maybe not right for this company, or we think you can move you into this team. You'd be more valuable executing here than over here. And so I think it's just about being honest with yourself and your staff around making sure that everyone's thinking commercially, because we don't see ourselves as a business development team and a partnerships team and sales operations. We see ourselves as a commercial function that lives and dies together.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're all in agreement with the decisions sometimes that are difficult to make, then everyone is on the same page with where growth comes from. And in our board's eyes, that's got to be through revenue growth.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily have to always be positive revenue growth, but revenue growth means you're growing.
So are they closing the deals?
Pretty much.
We're going to add a bonus question here because I'm super interested, actually. The EFSA score, can you tell us how you describe it and how you're using it?
Yes. So for anyone who's used a lot of the sales platforms out there that exist, quite a lot of them, you have to go in and tell it what you want to use based on the attributes and the fields and the values that you've created.
Yeah.
How you want to spit out some sort of score and lead scoring and that kind of stuff, which is prone to issues. It requires a lot of testing. It's quite fiddly and quite time consuming. Whereas for me, the EBSTA score ultimately is a direct measure of engagement, because we've recently, with help from Wayne, connected up our EBSTA platform at the back end straight into our G Suite, which means less problem in terms of onboarding, because we're not having to say to someone, follow these instructions, download this, add this, da, da, da. It's a little bit fiddly. I mean, it's fine, but it's much easier just to say, right, we've added you as a user on EBSTA. Everything's being sucked out of the back end, being injected into EBSTA. So that's a real bonus for us. And the score for me is just, it's very clear cut, because we have a measure of total engagement, which is the EBSTA score, which is inbound and outbound activity. And then you can then drill down into last activity date, 7, 30, 60 and 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
So you can start to obviously profile whether engagement is going up or engagement is going down. So from our perspective, if it's at a lead level in Salesforce, you've got a very clear indication without having to go into Chatter, look at tasks. If I just create a single report in Salesforce and I run all of my active prospects, say, and I've got a sales team of 10 people, these are the ones that are actually being worked on. And these are the ones that are probably going to progress and start to generate revenue before these ones, because this one's got a greater than 70 on the EBSTA score, which means the level of communication backwards and forwards is very high. Whereas these lower scored numbers or no scores means my salesperson's either just added it and therefore there hasn't been enough time for the score to develop, or what they told me in our one-to-one is absolute rubbish and that deal's not really going anywhere because there's no engagement. So it's sort of a good way of not checking up on people, but being able to monitor what's going on.
Yeah. And in quite an easy way, right? Because you could get that data from other places or by talking to salespeople, but then it's not as reliable and it'll probably take you a lot longer than just creating that one report.
Yes, absolutely. And then for me, on the opportunity level, so for us, we, you know, we convert from lead into opportunity, create account, contact in Salesforce. It's a way of us measuring their progression through our process, because they've gone through a process at the top of the funnel and they're moving into another process. And because our sales cycle is quite long, understanding their ability to progress from hand over to go live, because we only generate revenue once they've successfully funded. Yeah. It means we want to know where they are in our process.
Yeah. So quickly on that, once they've signed the contract, do they go from sales to the success team?
Yes.
Cool. Okay.
Yes. And we've actually recently created a quite a clever scoring system. So we have a prioritization score and a what we call a launch readiness score. So the prioritization score uses Ebster, and our guys at Distill are using that score and essentially mixing it together with a whole nother of number of factors from third party data, sectors that we know tend to perform slightly better than others. Merging that together, using engagement, and then pushing opportunities and saying, these are the ones that we think should be a higher priority because they're moving ahead. And then we couple that with a what we call a launch readiness score, which is how much of our process have they completed.
Yeah.
So you might be super engaged, but you've actually not started the process.
Yeah.
Or you might be not very engaged, but you're busy working on doing things.
The video is ready.
And we can see stuff, and we can see progress. So they're not uniform together, but they can be worked independently, and then we merge that as a single score, and then that helps us to move people through our processing.
So every week you can review all the what do you call that single score?
It's just called a blended score in
call it the Crowdkeep score.
Well, Crowdkeep score, yeah.
And so you can review that on a weekly meeting, and then the bottom four you'll like prioritize and be like, look, we need to get these guys to like do X or
yes, because if they're an opportunity, they can generate us revenue, and if they're live, they definitely closer to generating us revenue. Yeah.
Got it. Nice. Okay. Final question: who has taught you the most about sales operations?
So I've done quite a lot of, because I was quite new to it, and I know the role was quite new. There isn't a huge amount of information about sales operations, so I've done some reading.
Where have you read?
So there's I might even have it here actually. I think I might have written it down. So there's a book on Amazon, which is like, if you want to go for the bare basics, which is by a guy called W.W. Chi.
Okay.
I listened to that because it gives you a really solid foundation.
What's it called?
It's called The Basics of Sales, Basic, The Sales Operations Collective.
Yeah, we'll link to it below on the blog post.
And it's called W.W. Chi. There's another book that I've just started listening to called Predictable Prospecting, which is obviously about building forecasting models and pipeline development and using data. I've then coupled that with, like I said to you, we're in the process of bringing on an agency to work with and some coaching and development and helping our sales guys to master their craft. And they have a series of books, and they are trying to make the people think about selling as a science. And that book's by a guy called Jacco van der Kooi, who's a Dutch guy. And the reason for that is because selling has changed. Gone are the days where you're just solution selling.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be a much deeper. The word of mouth referral is super important as a validation, social validation, and that kind of thing. So it's kind of a collection of traditional sales stuff with new sales methodologies. Obviously, because I'm from a marketing background, I'm thinking and reading in the, you know, HubSpot, Salesforce blog world, and on those sort of ecosystems and forums and that kind of thing. And I think that kind of then gives you a bit of a rounded sort of data analytics, sales, and then operations piece. And I'm also very lucky in that I've got a great head of partnerships who I sit next to, who is a really good sounding board. We've also got a really good FD who's also interested in big data and data analytics. So he's very strong on the financial side, and we have a strong chief commercial officer. So the kind of the connection between all of us means that we've all got our own skills that then amalgamates together. And that's always super useful, right?
Nice. Fantastic. Okay, that was the longest episode of Sales Operations Demystified of all time. That was pretty deep.
Sorry about that.
No, that was really good. Like, there's some stuff that we definitely have not discussed before. Johnny, thank you so much. What we'll do is we'll link to both Crowdcube and Johnny, and also we'll link to the job description below if you search for EFTA Sales Demystified, you'll be able to find this episode, and then